So yeah, any of you think that you have imposter syndrome out there, believe me, it never goes away.
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 134 of Rogue Startups. Mr. Craig, how the heck are you this week?
Yeah, man, I'm doing good. We had a long weekend here, which was really nice. It's full on into summer here, so it's like time at the lake and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, it's really a fun time of year here after a horrendous winter with a ton of snow. So it's really it's a nice change. How about yourself?
Yeah, spring is in full swing over here. The leaves are out. Our garden is coming up, and I'm spending regular time outside. And I just got off the road from 3 weeks straight of conferences, freelancing, just all kinds of travel. Like, my family was like, "Don't ever leave again. You suck."
Yeah.
Oh, my kids were like, "Dad, I hate it when you're gone." You're like, "Oh." It just kills me to hear that.
It's tough, isn't it? It's really tough. I mean, I think, you know, like, we have enough pressure. I do, at least. I feel like I have enough pressure with, like, parenting and husbanding and business, and then you're gone for any of those and, like, doing your job, and then you have the pressure of kind of knowing that you're, whatever, sacrificing another part of your life, right? So it's just, it's tough.
Yeah, and you know, my wife was like, "All the crazy shit went down while you were gone," and I went back and I thought about it. So the two big things that happened while I was out of town on various weeks, one of them was the garage door broke. So the spring snap, she had to call out the garage door repair guy, and, like, you know, this is the stuff that if it was me around, she'd be like, "Okay, you just handle it, it's fine." But because I wasn't there, it was, like, very stressful, and you had to work around the kids' schedule and stuff like that. And so that was a huge pain in the butt. And, you know, she had to deal with everything remotely. She's like, "Is this okay? You know, how do you feel about this?" And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Just go ahead.
Yeah.
And the other thing was our youngest daughter got lice.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, this happens, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, it sounds
when your kids don't take a shower, that happens, right?
No.
I'm totally joking. I'm totally joking.
I know. No, it's about having the clean head in the class, and the lice love the clean hair. Anyway, so yes, my wife had to deal with that. You know, I'm the chief gross things officer in the house. That's my official title. So this would have definitely fallen under my purview had I been here, but since I wasn't, you know, I got to hear about that and then follow-ups, of course, when I return. So, yeah, but then, you know, I sort of looked back and I said to her, you know, crazy stuff happens all the time, even when I'm here. It's just the difference is that I'm here to help with it.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Yeah, you're right. I know. It just feels crazier while you're gone. You know, it feels crazier when 50% of the partnership is out."
Yeah.
So.
So after being gone for 3 weeks, do you find it difficult to kind of get back into the groove? I know that I'm sure all sorts of shit is going on and there's a million balls in the air, but do you feel like you have a good perspective and focus on things now?
You know, I felt the day that the conferences ended, like the day MicroConf ended, I felt like I had a great perspective on the business. And then the day that Shopify ended, I thought I had a great perspective on Shopify. And I took copious notes, and I just knew that it was going to be, if I didn't take those notes and write down to-dos, I would miss out on what I was supposed to do later, because the following week was when I went on my freelancer gig. And if I didn't have all that written down, it was going to be gone. And it's absolutely true. I look back at those lists and I'm like, "Oh, thank God I wrote that down, because I would have totally spaced it." But now that I've done like a week of freelancing after those two things, like, I feel like I've kind of lost that feeling already. And I've got these to-do lists. Plus, I've got this pile of stuff that's on my desk of personal stuff. Plus, we've got, like, things going on, you know, in our lives. We're having our hardwood floors refinished, so we have to, like, move all the furniture and take a bunch of stuff out of the house. And then they're doing some work on our patio in the backyard, so I got to deal with the contractors on that. And, you know, I feel like I'm being pulled in so many different directions that I can't maintain the focus on those things that I was supposed to go back and follow up on. And so I do find that I'm having a hard time getting back into it after that, which is unfortunate. But, you know, I'm kind of throwing myself into it as much as I can, but then I'm getting distracted by, you know, freelance stuff and personal stuff. And so I'm getting like snippets here and there, but I tried to like plow through a bunch of stuff yesterday just so I could have a better focus today.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel much better having gotten through that huge pile of shit on my desk. It was like a bunch of bills and things that were to do's and stuff I had to file and yada yada this and paperwork that. And now that's all done. So, you know, I at least got that out of the way. But like tomorrow some movers are coming and, you know, I kind of had that in the back of my mind. And then more contractor stuff interrupted today and more freelancer stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really struggling with that right now. And I know I've got other things I need to do. So I'm trying to like take little tiny tidbits of this stuff out. So I look at my list and I'm like, all right, I've got a half an hour. What can I knock off this list?
Mm-hmm.
And that's working pretty well, but not for all the bigger stuff, but for the smaller stuff. So I'm getting through it slowly, but it's a struggle. I won't lie.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, I have, you know, like this deep work kind of concept of like really getting into the groove and taking away distractions and the other things that we have competing for our priorities. I've been finding it's always been something that's difficult to me, but I've been finding like closing my browser or opening a new browser window and just working on one thing and saying to myself, like, okay, this morning I have to get this thing done before I respond to support queries or check my email or anything like that. Like at the beginning of the day and just after lunch, I'm really trying to like hammer these tough to do things that are easy to put off and easy to procrastinate because we have other things that are quote important, you know, like, I mean, customer support tickets are important, but like revising your stuff for GDPR is super, super important. Right. So like those, or like redoing a marketing page or something like that is like really, really, really important and takes like good focus and time and like dedicated mental space. Yeah. I mean, I struggle with it a lot, but I've been finding lately that like just like taking dedicated and making dedicated time in my schedule is the only way that I get some of those things done. So I guess it's been like a tiny win, but it's still something I suck hardcore at. It's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, you've got, you know, I don't want to say you have less things to juggle than I do. Like I'm some sort of, you know, martyr about the amount of shit I brought into my life, but cause that's not what the message I want here, but yeah, I mean, when you don't have the freelancing aspect of it, but you've got two different businesses, so I mean, that's just different. So
yeah,
carving that out, I think, is a little – if you're the master of all your domains, so to speak, I think making some carved out time is easier. With the freelancers, they're like, hey, we need you to work on this right now, and I kind of have to drop everything at that point. It's damn it, that was supposed to be my dedicated time. So that becomes more interrupt driven, and that gets really frustrating with me. But
yeah,
I have less control over that, so I'd sort of have to roll. You know, I don't really get to say no to that. At least not yet. I hope to say no to it soon. But yeah, controlling that I think is good, and I think if you can schedule those times when you can be less interruptible, that's also really good as well. You know, just getting that focus time is so hard. I don't know how long it takes you to get into flow, but for me, it's like anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But once I'm in, like I can stay in unless I get a deep interruption and then I'm out. And then it takes me like another 30 minutes to an hour to get back into it. So that's why it's like so frustrating to get all of this stuff that keeps coming in, you know, contractors coming to the door and freelancer stuff and whatever. I can't get into a flow state to get stuff done. So I'm like, ugh. So I have to find smaller tasks on my list where it doesn't matter if I'm in flow because that's a 5-minute task. Like you're not going to get into flow doing a series of 5-minute tasks.
Right.
Unless they're all the same thing, like, you know, 5-minute task after 5-minute task and then you're into repetition. But yeah, that's hard. That's just really – it's difficult to manage that. And it you know, it is what it is.
Yep.
So, but yep. I am excited post-Shopify, post-MicroConf about possibilities here. I got tons of agencies to follow up with. I was just having a discussion actually with one of them on Slack. in the Shopify partner discussion, and they were saying, hey, we only have two recommended apps. DM me if you want to be one of our recommended apps for our clients. And I'm all like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then I was discussing with this with him. And then I realized I went into this, you know, it was like going into a gunfight with nothing, you know?
So you got into the conversation and then.
And that's when I realized I didn't know what the standard offerings were for like SaaS affiliate deals. So I'm like opening up another Slack window on the side and I'm like asking all my SaaS friends, like, so what's the standard affiliate deal for SaaS? You know, how long does that go? Is it a one-time payout? Is it a percentage? Is it? And I'm trying to like get this information as he's typing in the other Slack over here. And then I realized that the initial offer I gave him was like not that interesting to him.
Uh-huh.
And now I know why, because what I was offering was not very standard for SaaS stuff. And I was like, damn it.
That's a kisser. That's a kisser.
Yeah. But then I looked at, oh, man, this is killing me. So I'm looking at what, you know, typical affiliate programs pay out in SaaS. And that's like, I don't know what you're planning on offering for Sales Camp or if you do anything for Podcast Motor. But like AWeber and ConvertKit and those guys, they're like 30% a month.
Yeah. So we don't have a formal program for Podcast Motor. We will have one for Sales Camp, but we do have one, and it is, I think, very successful for Castos. And we pay 20% lifetime recurring, so for the life of the customer. And we are one of the few, if not the only one, that pays lifetime commission. So we're able to get away with 20%. But I would go higher if we needed to. Yeah, I mean, I think you got to pay 20, 25, 30%, depending on how competitive affiliate activity is in your market. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what – I haven't looked at the other programs of other people that are like direct competitors that are larger than us. But – you know, like I'm already paying 20% to Shopify. So if I'm paying another 30% on top of that, there's half my revenue gone.
Yeah.
Right off the top. So like my LTV just got taken off at the midsection,
mm-hmm.
which is brutal. Yeah. But, you know, that maybe this is a better way to acquire customers. The guy that I was talking to, you know, I was saying that I wanted to have 3 months, like they had to be around for 3 months before I paid, because that would get them past the 90-day churn window. Although I don't have a ton of churn in that window, but I just, you know, I didn't know what kind of customers they would refer and whether they would work out or not. So I just wanted to have that as a thing in there. And he was like, yeah, 3 months is too long. I can't wait.
Yeah. I've not heard that kind of thing before, but I mean, it might be in other industries, but yeah.
AWeber does it. Infusionsoft does it. Infusionsoft, and they have a $500 one-time payout per customer.
Okay, well, so that makes sense after 3 months, then. But if you're paying monthly, then just pay them every time you get paid.
Yeah, but I mean, if you know how much an Infusionsoft install costs, like $500 is nothing,
right?
So those Infusionsoft guys are awfully stingy with their affiliate program for sure,
right?
But I guess they can be, you know, they're making bank, so.
Yeah,
I am not bacon bank yet, so I need to find a way to grow.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I kind of compare it to what I expect my customer acquisition cost to be if I was only doing like blogging or like paid ads or something like that. You know, 20-30% of the lifetime value of a customer paid to acquire them is probably about what I would spend. So to pay an affiliate that to know 100% guaranteed that you have that customer is kind of reasonable. So I look at it as like the safest bet you can make when acquiring a customer, right? Is like those people are only getting paid when you get paid. So there's no risk, right? It's not like running a bunch of Facebook ads that could result in nothing.
Right.
So
are you basically saying, so where did you arrive at those numbers? Was that just stuff that you had done a survey on, or are you just pulling that stuff out of your backside, or what?
Pulling it straight out of my ass. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I kind of benchmarked it against what other competitive SaaS affiliate deals are. And I just went and looked at, you know, Drip and ConvertKit and all these others and some not necessarily in our space, but like WP Engine, like other hosting related ones and saw like, you know, 20, 25, 30%. Talked to my buddy Carlos at Quaderno. They do quite a bit of affiliate stuff. They pay 25 or 30%. So, yeah, I mean, I think you look at it as like it's all upside, right? I mean, it cuts your customer lifetime value, but it's better than nothing. And there's almost no risk, right?
Well, it definitely reduces the risk, and it's a customer acquisition channel. Like, I mean, I realized that, you know, after this whole thing with Shopify, I was walking into an entirely different gunfight, completely unprepared. So, you know, I talked to one agency that was there that actually hosted one of the events. They had this big, nice building, and I was like, I'm totally out of my league here. Okay. But I just went up to the guy and I was chatting with him and I thanked him for the space. And then he asked me what I did and I told him about Recapture. And he's like, oh, well, you know, we would love to get a demo of your app. And, you know, so-and-so is usually in charge of that stuff there. And, you know, we like to have a whole list of whatever is available out there that we think would be a good fit for certain clients. And so why don't you just set up a demo and we'll talk. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. I'll totally set up a demo. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, fuck, I've never run a demo before on Recapture in my life. So, yeah, any of you think that you have imposter syndrome out there, believe me, it never goes away.
Yeah.
You're always faking it until you make it. So you just learn to do that next thing. You know, I kind of liken it to the Matrix where you're like, whoa, I know Kung Fu. You know, it's like you're not going to know a demo until you do your first demo. So here I am learning on the fly. I got the big pick jammed into the back of my brain. And Tank is typing away on the keyboard and jamming away the stuff for uploading demo to Dave right now. And in 5 minutes, I'll be like, whoa, I know demos, you know. And it's classic. Probably still going to suck, but that's okay. You know, like, that's the only way you learn, right?
My wife and I joke about it after we like go to dinner at a friend's house here or something. We come back and we say, I know French. Because you just get like French inundation for 3 hours at dinner and you're like, I know French. Yeah, so spoiler alert, Dave and I will be doing an episode on demos here in the near future because we've been doing a bunch for Sales Camp lately. Yeah, it's been interesting. And definitely not just like how to do a demo, but who and what type of business should do demos or like have a demo as the call to action, I think, as opposed to sign up for a free trial. We've been kind of evaluating all that and I think have settled on a pretty good setup at Sales Camp. So, we'll definitely be talking about that in a future episode. So stay tuned.
Yeah. We have much to learn, or maybe you have. I think you're more experienced on the demo side coming from a sales world, whereas for me, this is like, you know, I'm breaking new ground here and it's a little scarier. So, there's some learning to be had here on my side of this. So we'll be talking about that aspect as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much my wheelhouse, but I've definitely learned a lot about doing remote online demos. I mean, all my stuff was in person before. So learning experience for sure. You were talking about, so conferences have two, I guess, updates in the conference realm for us. One is I will be speaking at a one-day podcasting conference or like a meetup, I guess it would be, in London. So June 9th in London, doing a podcasting meetup. So if anyone is in the London area, wants to do some podcasting meetup, let us know. So it'll be fun getting together with two other folks in the podcasting world to do kind of a meetup there and talking about all things podcasting. So that's exciting. It's been a while since I've talked in person about podcasting, so that'll be fun. And then we decided our big conference in the podcasting world is called Podcast Movement. It's in Philadelphia in July. So we're going back to the States for like a month. And Castos is sponsoring basically the entire first day of the conference, several workshops. We're going to be sponsoring them at Podcast Movement this summer. So yeah, it's my first time as a conference sponsor, but, it was a really cool opportunity to be involved in some cool like workshops and small groups and stuff like that, that I think we could have some real, kind of access to people that are kind of in our target market, as well as kind of just putting our name on the proverbial map. So, Yeah, all sorts of talk about imposter syndrome. Like, I have to get one of those like pop-up banner things and like cards and t-shirts and all this conference swag stuff figured out that I've never done any of it before because I've never sponsored an event before. So I have to figure all that out remotely and have it shipped to Philadelphia in July. So that'll be a bucket of worms, I'm sure.
I have no doubt. Just in my very brief stint of looking at stuff for I panicked a little bit about this before Shopify Unite, and in the end I didn't do any of it, which was probably a good thing. But I was thinking, oh man, should I have some conference swag and give it out? And I was glad I didn't. It was the wrong way to approach it because it's not like I was a sponsor. It's not like I knew anybody there. It's not like I was going to talk to customers and give them a little treat or a reward or something like that. So it was all just discovery and trying to figure it all out. But if you're the sponsor, that's kind of different. You know, people kind of expect, all right, well, what'd you bring me, man?
Right. Where's my USB stick?
Given all the problems that people have had with USB sticks, I will never put a USB stick in my computer now for life at this point. If somebody gives away one of those at a conference, I'm going to be like, oh, great. I'll just throw that right away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good times.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think your point about imposter syndrome never going away is 1,000%. I mean, I think if you're not always uncomfortable and always learning, you're not moving fast enough and you're not moving your business forward. Because, I mean, we're constantly just saying, what the fuck is going on? What am I doing? How do I manage this? And it's great. It makes it exciting and stimulating and really cool to be doing all the time. So I think if you can view it like that, I think it's really great, right? If you view it as like, my life is falling apart all the time, then you're going to be stressed. But I think if you view it as like, wow, I'm learning every day and this is so cool. If you can have that perspective, then it's great.
Yeah, I agree. So the other thing that I wanted to bring up on the podcast today was that there was a major announcement in e-commerce. And, you know, it's interesting because I'm in a bunch of different channels to get the WordPress perspective and the Shopify perspective and then the Magento perspective on Twitter. But Magento got acquired by Adobe for 1.68 billion smackaroos.
With a B.
With a B. Billion with a B. And everybody's kind of scratching their heads at this. Like, what is Adobe getting out of this? And it's kind of funny to see the Magento communities doing a bunch of live streaming stuff and talking about this. And, you know, they're all expressing their opinions or whatever. But, you know, from an e-commerce perspective and a Shopify / Magento app store guy, I'm just kind of left wondering, what the heck does Adobe get out of this here?
Mm-hmm.
It's super bizarre. Like, they have this thing called the Adobe Cloud Experience, but literally until this deal, I had not heard one person refer to this on anything. And maybe that's just because I'm in the wrong circles. Maybe it's because, you know, I'm not in the enterprise-y stuff anymore, and that's just only enterprise-y stuff. But now that I've looked at it, it's like, well, it's kind of like Google Analytics and Google AdSense and maybe some AdWords stuff in there. But I'm like, what the hell does e-commerce have to do with this? So, yeah, that was really bizarre. Like, I didn't get that at all. And yeah. Everybody's kind of like – I mean, literally all communities are shrugging their shoulders. The Magento folks are like, I don't know what the hell this is. And Woo folks are like, what the hell's Adobe get out of this? And the Shopify folks are like pumping their fists in the air going, woohoo, everybody's coming to Shopify now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right.
So I'm thinking this was the perfect time to move over to Shopify. Like, if everybody starts bailing off Magento and heading over to Shopify in droves, I'm in the right space. So that's good. Had I not already done the app, I probably would have panicked and started the app now. But I feel like I'm good. We're there. That's not a problem. But yeah, it's interesting how when you're in somebody else's sandbox, one day and one event can have a massive impact across the entire ecosystem. And this is one of those days right here.
Yeah.
So.
And so, I mean, we were chatting about this before we started recording. So Magento is a little like WordPress and like the WordPress.com, where they have a enterprisey hosted solution, right? Because Magento, like WordPress, is open source, but they have a paid version, obviously, too, right? Which is what Adobe acquired.
I'm not that familiar with the entity of Magento itself, but I do know that there's like this thing called Magento Commerce where they sell the enterprise licenses, and I think they're working on a cloud offering. I think it's available. I'm not 100% sure because none of my customers on Recaptor use it. But the Magento cloud offering is like the enterprise version of Magento hosted like WordPress.com. So they take care of all the you know, hardware patching, yada, yada, yada issues, and all you do is run your store for the low price of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a month.
Right.
But the thing that they bought, I'm pretty sure, is that. Like the Magento itself is open source, so there's a piece of it that everybody has access to. It's on GitHub. You can't take that away. Like anybody can download it. So that part I don't think has really changed. I think it's just the other company that has. But they're kind of the ones that are driving most of the fixes into the Magento the community edition, they call it, which is like the regular open source stuff. And that usually comes out of enterprise. So, of course, you know, the Magento community that's mostly on the community edition is like they have a lot to say about this. And, you know, it's funny because I've talked to other Magento influencers and they're like, you know, number of partners that I've talked to today that won't say anything about the upcoming deal, you know, 7, 8, 9, like they're just counting on all of the numbers as they're going and asking different people. They're all kind of mum on the sale. And I'm sure that there's an NDA that went into effect.
Sure.
The sale went down or before it went down. But it's interesting that nobody seems to really know what's going on at this point with that. But yeah, it's that split open source, you know, it's like a Red Hat model where they give away the JBoss server, but they have the whole, hey, we'll do professional services behind that. And I'm pretty sure that's the way that Magento kind of runs it here too.
I mean, my opinion of Adobe is, geez, not great. I don't know. That's the short version. I mean, Photoshop is obviously in the Creative Cloud now is kind of their thing. And I know they were a very early entrant into kind of SaaSifying what was a downloadable one-time product in Photoshop, right? And making it a subscription thing now. But I mean, my understanding from like the creative world is that everyone is moving to Sketch, right? For website design away from Photoshop. The Creative Cloud has some assets that are still kind of best in class, but I know my opinion of Adobe and the Creative Cloud is it's a little bit of a legacy item and I don't know, getting into kind of has-been territory. I don't know, is that accurate?
You know, that's a pretty common perception, but I don't know that that's the case.
Okay.
And here's the arguments that I'm going to throw out. So I used to be a professional photographer back in a previous life.
No.
So did, yes. Nice. I was actually a professional landscape photographer. It sucks to make a living at that, let me tell you.
I can imagine.
Which is why I'm here. That's why I'm here. So anyway, you know, I used to use Adobe Photoshop all the time. Like it was the go-to tool for that. And of course, we all bought it. And then occasionally every 2 or 3 years, you'd buy the full upgrade version, which was like 50% of the original version. And it was always like hundreds of dollars to do that. But at some point, Adobe got wise and figured out, hey, everybody else is SaaSifying their stuff. Why can't we SaaSify this? So they were – I wouldn't say that they were super early to the game of SaaSifying. They were early late to the game, if there's a late to the game at all at this point. But yeah. They basically started making all their offerings on the cloud so that they were always up to date, and then you paid a monthly fee for them. And this caused a massive uproar in that photographer community because they're all like, oh, you fucking bastards. I can't believe that you're going to be charging me monthly for something that I paid for one time.
That I use every month. And
yeah. And if you go back – and the problem is that outrage was very, very unjustified because Adobe's pricing was extremely reasonable when you looked at it, but it was just the fact that they wanted to charge you every month that pissed everybody off. But it's like $10 a month, you know, to get full access to the whole Creative Cloud. Like, I actually have it. I use it. I still keep access to it. I don't use Photoshop anymore. I actually use a tool called Acorn on Mac, which is fine. It was a one-time purchase, and I just didn't need the full power of Photoshop for doing what I was doing with it for most of my, you know, tweaking of screenshots and adding this or that. But I still use Lightroom because I download a bunch of stuff off my digital camera. So I still pay $10 a month for it, and it's working just fine. Like, I don't really have a problem with it. The only thing that kind of sucks is actually Adobe's thing that integrates with Mac that's supposed to be downloading my stuff all the time. It's fucking broken as hell on whatever version on Mac. So I've never gone back and fixed it, but I was like, I just don't use it often enough to worry about it. If I was more of a power user, it would be a big deal. But all of this is sort of a digression from Adobe as a company. Like, I feel like Adobe has done a really good job of retooling itself from a one-time downloadable desktop company, because that's what they were. They've been like that for years. They were all the way back into the 80s with this.
Yeah.
And they had to basically turn themselves into a Salesforce-style SaaS company, and they're actually growing. Like, a stock recommendation service that I subscribe to actually said, buy Adobe. And it was because they had basically retooled their entire business to a recurring income, and their revenue showed a growth trajectory over the last 5 years, all because of this SaaSification.
Yeah.
So, you know, props to Adobe for running their business in a really good way and making something of it, because I think the perception that you gave is the perception that I hear a lot, but, you know, I'll bet if you were to go ask the hardcore people that still use Photoshop, they'll probably like, well, yeah, that sucks, but I still own it, you know.
Right.
I mean, they probably are using it there, because there's got to be, you know, if they're making billions of dollars a year, and I don't know, remember what Adobe's revenue was. The number 13.5 billion sticks in my head for some reason for 1 year's revenue, and I don't remember when that was or whatever, and I could just be making that number up completely. But, you know, you don't make $13 billion or hundreds of millions of dollars a year if you're not selling to somebody somewhere, somehow. So their model must be working in a reasonable way, even if a lot of people are bitching about it. So that's, you know, one of those people can complain about your prices, but if they still turn around and pay you, you're probably at a good price point at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to go higher than that, but you're still – you've got enough lock-in or product market fit that they don't want to go to the competitor. They want you.
Yeah.
They're just going to complain about it. I've seen that on WordPress. Like, I have a couple of guys that like complain about specific features that we've not had. And I'm like, I think I've had one guy complaining about the same thing for 2 years. And I keep telling him, like, look, dude, I have these other features that are above it right now. And I have so many more people asking for them. I have to do it on demand. Like, I can't just, if this is a priority for you, like, let's do it as custom work. Like, tell me what your budget is. I'll tell you what an estimate is in this. I'll prioritize it. If it's really super important to you, I'll move it to the top of the list. Every time I've offered that, and I've offered it like 3 or 4 times,
crickets.
Never takes me up
right.
on it. Total crickets. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so I understand that this is important to you, but it's not important enough to pay, which in my book translates to it's not as important as you think it is.
Yeah.
Like, if they're willing to pay for it, they're like, boom, here's the cash. I'm like, okay, that's pretty important. I can listen to that.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good way to prioritize it. Now, obviously, Adobe's prioritizing it in a similar way. I'm just trying to figure out how the fuck Photoshop and Lightroom and, you know, Adobe PDF Viewer, PDF Reader or whatever, and all this other stuff has anything to do whatsoever with Magento and how this is going to work out. Because I don't know if you knew this. Magento actually used to be owned by eBay.
No, I didn't know that. No. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
This was before my time of getting into it, and apparently it was an unmitigated fucking disaster. You know, eBay also owned PayPal at one point, so, you know, that tells you a lot.
Right.
I think eBay was just on a random acquisition thing, and they didn't really know how they were going to integrate it. They just were trying to do it while they were hot, and they just weren't thinking strategically. Or, yeah, I really don't know what they were thinking on that one either. Maybe that they could somehow integrate Magento into eBay, or – and I'm like, whatever. So anyway, that was a big head scratcher for a long time, and eventually Magento got spun out of eBay, and, you know, apparently there's some bad things happened from the Magento leadership, I guess somebody left and other stuff happened. And yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of people that are talking about, oh my God, it's eBay all over again. And I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't around for eBay the first time. Let me grab some popcorn. This could be interesting.
Right. No, but I mean, I think if you look at it, like Photoshop, Lightroom, in our world, Adobe Audition is the preferred tool for audio editing for all of our guys at every one of our guys at Podcast Motor.
I didn't even know about that tool.
Yeah, I mean, it's an audio editing recording tool. I think from a product perspective, even if Photoshop is a little older at this point, and maybe some other things like Sketch have come into the forefront for web design, I think from a product perspective, it's a solid company. And I'm sure they're just looking at it like, we got some money. This is kind of a strategic acquisition where we can cross-sell things and expand our digital footprints. It says a hell of a lot about the financial health of the company if they can raise the capital to acquire a $1.6 billion asset. I think in that respect, you got to say Adobe's got their shit together if they can pull that deal off. I'm sure it's a little bit of reorienting their priorities, you know, like it's not just Photoshop and Lightroom and Adobe Audition. It's getting into e-commerce, which is great. And I mean, I guess I look at it a little bit like Lead Pages acquiring Drip. I mean, it's not at all the same, but like those two things weren't at all similar, right? Like, not any more similar than Photoshop and Magento. But
I can see like in the Lead Pages world, like I can see where Drip fits. Like that makes sense to me. Like Lead Pages is all about having these, you know, funnels that people are going through, and email marketing is like an obvious addition to that already existing sane world. But with Adobe, I'm like, so where the hell does e-commerce fit in with Photoshop and, you know, this Adobe Experience Cloud? Like, who the hell uses it?
Mm-hmm.
What do they do with it? Why does analytics and advertising have anything? Well, okay, that's a stupid question. Analytics and advertising have everything to do with e-commerce. But this is like – it's almost like the cart before the horse, right? You have a bunch of people that are using analytics. They need e-commerce before they do that stuff, because like what is it that you're measuring with advertising? What is it you're measuring with analytics? What is it you're advertising for?
Right, right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably their foray into websites and hosting and e-commerce and all these other things that maybe their existing tool set can cater to, and maybe they have a bigger plan, probably like Lead Pages and Drip, to create like a suite of whatever online tools. I don't know, but I'm sure they have 1.68 billion good reasons to do it. And I mean, it's cool. I can understand from the perspective of the folks in the Magento community, especially if they've been burned before with, you know, the eBay thing, that they're a little hesitant about it. But I mean, for a company to put a bunch of money behind your brand and your product is a huge vote of confidence, right? Because, you know, they got a lot invested in making that work now, right? Like that's – in a lot of respects, I would feel really good about that if I was a Magento guy. I would be a little concerned that like the other side of that coin is like in the e-commerce world is – we talked about last episode, like Shopify owns the whole stack, right? So like what if now Adobe just kind of shuts down all the open source development and makes – Magento just like a closed ecosystem and kind of privatizes it.
You'd have a ton of pissed off partners at this point
from a business perspective, if that's the best way to go, and they can look at Shopify and say, well, Shopify does it like this and they're obviously hugely successful. We can leave an open source component to it, but we'll put all of our resources into the private part of it. I don't know. That would scare me, obviously, but that's the only downside I can see.
Well, I guess it's up to the winds and the gods right now to find out exactly how this thing all shakes out. So, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, interesting. So, yeah, we were talking about kind of prioritizing development, and we just had a very real kind of experience of this where we had a feature that a couple of our customers, existing paying customers, had asked for that would be kind of a fun, neat thing that we would develop. Turns out it would be kind of relatively complex and did like some hard kind of looking and asking ourselves and talking to those customers about how important it was, and spent a little bit of time and money on kind of investigating this and developing it, and then moved away from it to kind of add another product offering to Castos. That's something that we'll be developing here in the next few weeks or month it'll take to develop it. But yeah, I mean, talking about how important something is and prioritizing it in your dev queue, because I mean, we all have limited resources. Even if you're a hugely funded startup, you have some sort of limitation on your resources. We kind of learned a little bit the hard way, like, don't just look at what some customers say to build a thing that's nice to have, but you know, really look at, like, for us, it's like, how can we either get more customers onto the platform that we have now or get a platform that has more valuable offerings that people are willing to pay for. And so that's kind of where we're going now, is like looking for other ways we can add value to the platform and the plugin and the podcaster. So, I mean, it was a nice way to learn a lesson, like a little bit the hard way, but not like losing our ass. But I can see that, like, you can go down this rabbit hole and make huge mistakes if you aren't very conscious of your time and financial resources when it comes to development. So I'm excited.
And even when you're conscious, you can still have problems.
No, totally, totally, totally. But I mean, I'm excited to kind of talk about that more as we get closer, and like the dynamic that it will add to Castos from like a business and product perspective, because it'll be really cool. But it's taken a fair bit of like thought and planning to how we'll position this new kind of offering. So yeah, it's not just development time and money. It's like, you know, kind of where does this fit with the rest of the stuff we do? So yeah, it's been an interesting exercise so far.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I hope to hear more about that in the very near future.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So if you have any thoughts, questions, or comments that you would like us to chat about, whether it's about the whole confusing Magento thing, Focus, or Craig's new thing that he can't talk about yet, send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you've got 5 minutes, we would love to hear from you on iTunes with a review of the podcast. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.